My parents immigrated to Berlin in 1948, both of them. I've always felt some affinity for Max and his children. So let me just say a few things. One is, there are two centers at the College of Charleston in the Jewish world. There's a center of Southern Jewish culture, where we just founded the Charleston Lipov Center for Southern Jewish Culture. And we have the Zipper Goldberg Center for Holocaust Studies. It is incredibly appropriate that Max Heller represents Holocaust studies and Southern Jewish culture. I mean, it's just a perfect sort of fit. Max really has also always been a hero of mine. If you move from New York to South Carolina, there's something alien about South Carolina in some ways, but something absolutely wonderful about South Carolina as well. And I think Max represented the wonderful about South Carolina. Really, a person who made a huge contribution to South Carolina, given a history in Germany, which was very, very cultured, but in the end, horrible and horrendous. Just on a personal note, when we started an advisory board in Jewish studies, Jewish studies needed some credibilities, and I reached out to Max. I didn't know Max well, but I reached out to Max to see if he would join the advisory board of the Jewish Studies program at the College of Charleston. And he agreed. He agreed. He said he would do anything he can to support Jewish studies in South Carolina. So Max really was a founding member of the Jewish Studies Program Advisory Board. Another way that we honored Max, the society honored Max, is really we have an award, really, and we have the Order of the Jewish Palmetto. And it's harder to get the Order of the Jewish Palmetto than it is to get the Order of the Palmetto. Unlike other Jewish organizations, the Historical Society has been very, very, very restrictive in who it awards the Order of the Jewish Palmetto. The Society unanimously decided about 8 years ago or 9 years ago to offer it to Max and Trudy for their huge contributions to South Carolina and its Jewish history. So it really is, for me personally, very, very special to be here this morning introducing this panel. Trudy, you've been a wonderful person, and you should continue to do wonderful things. I will introduce Ernie Marcus, who will moderate the panel. Ernie is the president of the South Carolina Jewish Historical Society.
Thanks, Mark. I'm very excited to be the moderator this morning for the talk on Max Heller. My background is work-wise in Washington, D.C. is in urban revitalization, so it's particularly interesting to me about his life. And I was in downtown Greenville for the first time since I was 6 years old last night, so it was unbelievable. Really, really unbelievable. I'm also the son of a mayor, a little bit smaller town. Utahville is 500 people, so but still, I know what it's like to be the political, part of the political dynasty of the town. So we're going to start on the end of introductions for Stephen. His bio is on my phone, so I'll get through it. A producer, composer, engineer, and writer, Stephen Heller has earned 3 Grammys, 5 Grammy Award nominations, and many other national awards. His work encompasses music for artists, film, television, and other media. Stephen was lead editor and director for large-scale implementation of training software for hospital physicians, He served as music supervisor and producer for the Miramax film, The Journey of August King, composing and producing music for the film. Stephen composed, orchestrated, and adapted the music package for the Animal Planet Network, a division of Discovery. He's had numerous award-winning films, features, documentaries, children films. Stephen's been the recipient of numerous Telly and Addie Awards for television and radio music compositions. And he's going to be singing his entire...
Yes. Ernie, I think that's enough.
And I think that's about... That's good enough. He lives in Asheville, North Carolina with his family. Next to him is Susan. And Susan is the middle child of the Hellers. lives in New York and Florida, but is a frequent visitor to Greenville. She was married for 45 years to the love of her life, Edward Moses, and has been widowed for 6 years. Susan has been a travel consultant for 25 years and still active. Plus, she writes and travels. She has 2 children and 4 grandchildren. And Tricia is to her right.
No. Francie.
Oh, Francie, I'm sorry. I knew that. Francie is the managing partner of Heller Advisory in New York, connecting alternative investment managers to institutional investors. She has over 30 years of experience in the public and private sectors. She graduated from Boston University with a BS and earned a master's equivalent degree from Georgia. Francie serves on several boards, including the Corporate Advisory Board of the National Association of State Treasurers, and is the chair of the Investment Committee for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. In addition, she chairs the Investment Committee for Furman and Big Picture Learning. She has 4 children and 11 grandchildren. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Governor Riley, Secretary Riley, is the first 2-term governor of South Carolina and the longest serving U.S. Secretary of Education in history. As governor, education was a key element in his tenure, as his Education Improvement Act was described as the most comprehensive education reform measure in the United States. As Secretary of Education, he helped launch President Clinton launch initiatives to raise academic standards, improve instruction to the disadvantaged, increase parental and business involvement, and improve after-school programs, among many other improvements. After his public service, he joined the law firm of Nelson Mullins Riley and Scarborough, where Ed Polakoff is also a partner, in Columbia. Still, he remains active in improving education as a member of various boards, including his alma mater, Furman, right here, and as a professor at Carolina. Interesting for us, Governor Riley joined with our society's founding president, Isidore Lurie, to found the New Democrats movement in the state to help promote educational improvement and economic progress. Another interesting fact, Governor Riley was considered by Bill Clinton as an appointee to the Supreme Court, but that went to Justice Ginsburg, which is good for the Jews. So. Governor Riley will talk about his long relationship with Max Heller, including his appointment of Max to the chairmanship of the South Carolina Development Board. And next, Trudy. Trudy is from Vienna, Austria. She escaped with her family as Europe began to collapse in chaos before World War II. And she was able to get out. Many of her family was not, and they talk about that. But you'll learn a lot more about her in the next few minutes, so I won't talk a lot more. But 3 children, 10 grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren. So it's great. So we're going to just kind of open it up with you guys talking. I'm going to ask some questions towards the end, but these guys know the story a lot better than I do. So, Francie, questions?
Stephen wants to start.
I guess I'll start. You know, I think a lot of people know the story about my father and my mom. Not talking loud enough. How about now?
Is it on?
Not on.
Why don't you go up here?
Mark.
Can't you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to about right here.
How about now? Can you hear me now? Okay. How about now?
No.
It's on.
Yeah, pretty close to your mouth.
Okay. Hi. Anyway, a lot of people know the story. I've seen the interviews with.
No.
Hello.
Anyway, a lot of you have probably seen my father's interviews and my mother's interviews.
Why don't you come up here?
But I'm fine. But I wanted to tell a story my father told me about leaving Austria. He'd gotten his visa with the help of his sister, Paula, who was very good at getting in front of lines and getting things done. And it was very sad for them. And his parents especially. This was the first time they'd been apart or going to be apart. So my father's mother took him to the tailor and had two suits made for him because she wanted him to be dressed well. Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, everyone can hear me.
See, Bruce, just stand up with the mic. That's easier.
Yeah. All right.
I couldn't hear a word.
Well, thank her. You know the story. So she had two suits made for him so he'd be well dressed when he left and came to the New World, to the United States. And my father tells a story about going to the train station finally with food and his new clothes with his sister Paula, and they get on the train, and of course it was the old-fashioned train, and they opened the window and they held hands with their parents. And as the train started going, the parents ran to hold their hand as long as possible. And my father said he looked out the window and his parents got smaller and smaller and smaller, and it was the worst day of his life. So that's one story I wanted to tell. I'm not sure you hear that. And before that, after Hitler took over Austria, my father had a job at a company, a Jewish-owned company. And after Hitler came in, he came into work. And at 17, he was already the buyer for this company, this import company, I believe. But he came in, and the Jewish owner was gone. And the foreman, who was not Jewish, was now his company, and they made my father go through Vienna with a pull cart with items. And at one point, he saw one of his best friends across the street, and his best friend hailed him. And my father was glad to see him. He came across the street. But it turned out he was there to beat him because he was now a pig Jew. And so that was another terrible moment. And my mother went through a lot of difficult things to get here. And the thing that always made me proud of them, yes, I was proud of their accomplishments, by far amazing. But they were brave after going through all they went through. As mayor of Greenville, my father did a lot of things that made the alt-right upset. And they would get death threats on the phone. But they persevered through that. They never let it stop them. And I think that's why I'm the most proud of them. Their bravery and their love for this community. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, like Ernie said, I'm the middle child. I played it to the hilt all my life. Daddy never fell for it. I like to say Francie's my little big sister and Stephen's my big little brother. Anyway, growing up in our household was wonderful. Our parents were the most optimistic, forward-thinking people. We were not to complain, and we appreciated everything that was given to us by what was given to them. But I'd like to say that a lot of you know about my dad's work and his accomplishments, and you always hear about the woman behind the man. My mother was the woman next to the man. They did everything together. If we asked one of them if we could do something, and they said no, and we went to the other one, we got in big trouble. And if we ever would say to our dad, "But she said," he would say, "She has a name." So there was this bond between my mom and dad, unbreakable, still to this day unbreakable. It scared my mom a little bit that right before Daddy passed away, he spoke to a group just a few weeks before, right, Mom?
2 weeks.
2 weeks before. And at the end of his speech, he, as always, talked about his love for my mother, and he said, "And by the way, when I go, I'm taking her with me." So, thank God he didn't. And it was such a pleasure to see all of you here. I see my camp friends, my BBYO friends, my high school friends. It's always a joy to come back to Greenville. Thank you. I'm the oldest, as you know. We were asked to tell a little bit of things about my father you might not know. So one of the things that I remember my father talking about was when he was a child, they were very religious. And on the Sabbath, they would all sit in the same bed and tell stories and read from the Bible. And so that's something that stayed with me, the Jewish life there. My father, and yesterday there were people talking about Jewish peddlers. My father's mother carried linens on her back from door to door in Vienna. That's where they lived. And my father, at 13, went to work to help out. And as my brother said, by the age of 17, he was the
chief buyer.
Yeah, he was the chief of the. So he worked from the time he was 13 to help out. He was also, if you don't know, the junior wrestling champion of Austria. So, yes, so even though he was not a very big person, he was a very strong person. Another little fact about my father is they were very kosher, but when he got on the ship to come to America, he asked to see the kitchen to make sure it was kosher. And there, for the first time, he saw the shrimp and bacon in the kitchen and knew that was the end of his kosher life. My father sold his factory in 1968 and devoted his life to public service, and I'm sure you've read about the many things he did. But in 1971, he ran for mayor and was mayor until 79, where he was asked to run for Congress. And my father won the primary. And many of you may know this story, but Lee Atwater was the campaign manager for Carol Campbell, and they did a poll. And I think this was the beginning, if we look at what's going on right now in politics, I think this was the beginning of sort of nasty politics. The poll had three questions. The first question was, would you vote for a Jew? And the second one was, would you vote for a refugee? And the third question was, would you vote for someone who would not take Christ as their Lord?
Take the, what?
Christ. Would not accept Christ. The first two questions, people answered yes. They would vote for a Jew and they would vote for a refugee. But the third question, no. And they brought in a third party and a third candidate who, as his platform, used that Heller did not believe in Jesus Christ. And from my father being favored to win until the election, that's when there were threats on our lives. All his plaques were pulled down, and my father lost the election. But my father, being who he was not bitter, accepted this. And even, it was in the New York Times the next day that anti-Semitism raised its ugly head again. And I think, to me, that was really the beginning of the way a lot of politics are run today, unfortunately. So just wanted to tell you that story.
Max was a really good guy. He proposed to me when I was 14 and he was 17. He didn't propose. He said, "I'm going to marry you." I thought he was crazy, but he always kept his word. Through so many happenings that we went through, and he went to South Carolina, I was still in Vienna, I spent 6 weeks in the woods hiding, and I'm sure some of you have heard my speeches. And then we got together, and it was you will see if you go to the statue that it was a young woman in Greenville that he met a year before Hitler came, and he was gone dancing, and she was there with a group of girls celebrating their graduation from college, and he was 17 at the time, but he asked one of them to dance with him, and they said okay. And then he asked her to put her name and address in his little black book. And the next day he called me and he told me about it. I was not too enthused. And 1 year later, he called me when Hitler marched in that day and said, "Do you remember, I met a girl from America. I wrote her today to ask her to help me come to the United States." And she did. She was engaged to be married because she was 4 years older than he. And her father knew Shep Saltzman, who had a big factory in Greenville, and they made an appointment with him. He wrote a letter that said, if a woman like her, who is not Jewish, wants to help, how can I not help? All this correspondence we saved, it's not the Jewish Museum in New York. They honored him also at the museum. It's a fantastic story. I had a bad time, just for another speech. I spent 6 weeks trying to get out of there with my mother in the woods in the winter, but that's another story. Max, I can truly say, was good all the way through, and he always wanted to help others. When we were first married, we had nothing and supported parents. I was saving pennies and nickels to buy 2 chairs because we didn't have enough chairs. He found the money and he said, "What's this?" I said, "We need chairs." And he said, "Oh no," and he gave it to the synagogue. And I'll never forget it. but that's how he was. And also, he wrote something that I think he would like, and it says, "Don't take Statue of Liberty's blessing for granted." He said, "Don't be shocked if I tell you a story. This is a story of a longing and desire. Continue to read and you'll see what I mean. We met 6.5 years ago." That's when he was in this country, 6.5 years. "And she didn't know me, but I learned of her and had seen pictures, even though I had never close to her. It was fun when I first saw her. It was from a distance, and it was misty. I could see very little, but I knew it was she even then. I knew it had to be her, for I had dreamed of this moment too long. My heart started pumping very fast, and I looked at her with admiration and tenderness in my heart. Perhaps this was only another dream. For years I had been longing to meet her. And there she was, so close to me. She meant so much to me then and still does. Freedom from fear, freedom from want, freedom of religion, freedom of speech. Maybe you guessed it by now. Yes, the Statue of Liberty, a wonderful symbol. Have you ever seen her? She's beautiful. To me, she meant life, not existence. Freedom, not slavery. For nights on end, I was kept awake with the thought of her, the first symbol of America. You should love her just as much, and you should be proud of her for what she meant to you and me and what she stands for. She looked like a mother and also like a sweetheart. Scenes were passing through my mind, scenes and faces of the many unfortunate people who would never see her. And of those who will never know what she stands for, I also thought of those who never cared to know her. Slowly we passed her, I turned around and continued to look at her. I made a promise to myself then to do nothing to make her ashamed of me, to love her forever, to have faith in her and in the people she protects. Make this promise too. Don't take her for granted. Think about her and don't neglect her. Be thankful, for you never had to dream of her. You always had her, and she always protected you. Love her, cherish her, and protect her, for she's emblematic of the right to life, liberty, and the portrait of happiness. One thing I wanted you to know that we weren't telling at the time. When Max was mayor, he wanted a hotel on Main Street, the Hyatt. And he had friends, Tommy Weitz had a cousin in the Hyatt people. And he made a meeting for them, and they flew to Chicago, and the name of the president at the time was Pritzker. And they met with them and they all said, sorry, we don't put hotels in a place as small as Greenville. Mr. Pritzker was Jewish and he started to talk to Max. They found out that Max's mother and Mr. Pritzker were born in the same little village in Poland. We have a Hyatt.
The title of our panel, then, and I appreciate so much what everyone has said, Max Hello, the Father of Modern Greenville. That really says it all about my part. I'm to talk about Greenville and the South Carolina and whatever that Max has impacted. And he was literally the father of modern Greenville. Greenville, before Max Hello, was really kind of a sleepy mill town, segregated in many, many ways. Max sold his successful business, as many of you know, Maxon Shirt Company, in 1962, and then went on to devote his life to community service, as was said. None of us really realized how important that was for Greenville and for South Carolina at the time. But when he made that commitment, it was the beginning of the change of things for Renaissance in this region, and that's what got it started, his commitment, supported by his loyal wife. Now, I've made a lot of speeches and referred to Max a lot of times. Many of you have heard me in various speeches. I used to say he didn't have anything when he came to Greenville. He ended up, of course, a textual great leader. That he really had 40 cents in his pocket when he first went out with his host family. Then Max, with a twinkle in his eye, would say, "Dick, it was $1.40. And I said, "Well, it's the same story, basically." Well, Susan had that in her article, which I was glad to get corrected. So anyhow, it was $1.40. So we go into history with that amount. Max was elected to the Greenville City Council in 1968. Then in 71, he was elected mayor. And I would point out it was with strong bipartisan support. And we had lots going on then, we always have. Francie discussed that somewhat, but he had strong bipartisan support and always did. And that was something that helped Greenville grow. The original focus of his entire service on city council and mayor was very clear. He wanted to bring all of our people together. He believed in one Greenville, and he wanted to do his part as the mayor of the city to make it that way. Everybody treated equally, everybody involved with each other and listening to each other and supporting each other. That was Max Hella's one Greenville. In his first action, he desegregated the city's departments and the commissions of the city. Any of you that are into politics, and I know some of you are, that's not easy. He did that. That was his first, that was a statement to the people here, leading our city to then a peaceful desegregation. He later created the mayor's prayer breakfast, and many of you here know about that. It's an annual coming together, open to all people of all faiths, and he makes that very clear, and it really is a very successful event. He and Trudy led our city in so many ways, but notably a true revitalization of downtown that has given us national recognition. People come to Greenville all the time just to see Greenville and the main street, and I think we're going to have a tour there for some of us after this is over. He had many friends, and many of you are in that category, probably all of you, but I'll tell you, Trudy was his true partner, as was said. That was very clear. They were a team. It was Max and Trudy. Had the same hope, both of them did, the wonderful family support for his beloved city. But revitalization was the focus of his service. And Max led in the development of our beautiful downtown, the Heritage Green, the downtown place, downtown, that was new. Everybody was going outside of town for shopping centers or whatever, but this was pulling things back downtown. Hughes County Library, the Little Theater, County Museum of Art, Children's Museum, Upstate History Museum. These things are right there in this beautiful Heritage Green, and those of you that go downtown will see that in downtown, all giving strength to downtown. Main Street was converted from a four-lane thoroughfare for cars to a two-lane street lined with trees and wide sidewalks for people. He shifted from people, from cars to people. And that's one of the things that really made Greenville so noticeable and so loved. When you walk down Main Street, you'll have a real good feel for that. And talking about Austria or Europe or whatever, it has a real European look to it, and I think that's part of Max Hella's contribution also. And he and I, and Trudy and Tucky, my late wife, we've walked the streets of Paris and Stuttgart and Tokyo and everywhere else, and it really, Greenville has that kind of European look. And those of you that have moved around know that. Max involved a lot of his friends, and you can name them 50 of them, but if you think about Mickle and Tommy Weitz, David Freeman, people who were very close using his urban renewal legal services. Then they brought in the Hyatt Regency, the convention center there, the Daniel Building on the north end, the south end, then had the new Greenville News Building, and then the Peace Center, and now on down to the Beautiful Falls Park. The same day that he, when he ran for Congress, and Francie mentioned that, and I'm glad she did, that's very important in Max's life. He was clearly way ahead. Again, really getting bipartisan support. And then all of a sudden he went down. And she alluded to that, and it was a very tragic time, and you see so much of that now, and you wonder where we're going with all that, but all of us need to turn all that negative stuff around. But he was defeated then in a very bitter and unfortunate campaign, and it bothered us all. The same day he was defeated, I was elected governor. The very next day, the first move I made as governor was to appoint Max Heller to the highest appointed position in the state. At that time, even higher than it is now, it was the word, who is going to be the chair of the State Development Board, and that was a big deal. And I called Max up the next day, after his defeat and my victory, and he said, let me talk it over with Trudy. He knew that it would be something that would, they would have to make major changes or locks out of Columbia, the capital, a lot of traveling or whatever, and Trudy had to be certainly with him and part of that and part of that decision. We talked the next day, and he told me that he and Trudy had decided that he would accept the appointment. And I'll tell you, under his leadership, those were record years in the development of this great state, in new investment and better investment and additional investment in the state. I was so honored to be with him and Trudy during that time. Max's leadership of Greenville and of South Carolina. Remember South Carolina, we're here talking primarily about mayor and city of Greenville, but it grew into a leader, and a lot of you here from Charleston and Columbia. He was a leader there too. He was into urban planning, and that was important to him. And that included an awful lot of good people helping do all that planning throughout the state. But what he meant to Greenville and to our state involved a lot more than urban planning. He had a vision for Greenville and a vision for our state, and he thoughtfully took the action, always with some risk. He didn't back off on risk. Thoughtfully, always, he moved forward with action to get the job done. And I close my little remarks here with a quote of William Blake. I read in a magazine recently. He was a British poet and writer in the early 1800s. And he said these lines, is credited with them. Vision, think of Max Heller and his vision. Vision without action is merely a dream. Action without vision is a waste of time. Vision with action can change the world, or it can change a city, or it can change a state. And our beloved friend, Max Heller, had vision. He took the action to bring people together, all people, to accomplish his vision. And he changed our community and he changed our state. And he is indeed, in terms of Greenville, he is the father of modern Greenville. Thank you.